Hello and welcome to At the Pass. I'm your host, Adam Vetterell, and this is a show about the Ottawa restaurant scene for the Ottawa restaurant scene. I hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome to At the Pass. I'm really excited to introduce today's guest and a good friend of mine, Jamie Stunt. Last week I spoke with Alex McMahon from Arlo, and today we're going to hear from the man who'll be cooking the food at that restaurant. Jamie, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Adam.
All right. Well, I'm going to start this the way I always start and ask you, how did you get into this industry and how did you end up where you are right now?
Well, this is an easy one. You were there, remember? at the Barley Mow.
Yeah, the Manly Mow.
I started at the Barley Mow. Before that, my only experience in the industry was I was a dishwasher at Patty's Pub on Bank Street back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I had worked at a Mexical Roses in Montreal as a dishwasher and a busboy and as a cook. So when I was at the Barley Mow, when we worked together there, that was actually my first real cooking job.
Don't you have a crazy story from that dish pit in Montreal?
Oh, there was a lot of characters at the Mexical Roses. There was the opera singer, server. There was the like guy that lived under the stairs behind behind the dish pit that would like, you know, we would give him like ice cream and coffee and stuff. And he would like sort of could speak to me like through the grate. So he'd be like, "Hey, Jamie, it's me, Mike Michelle. Sometimes they call me Frank. Can I have some ice cream and don't be afraid to give me too much." And yeah, it was, there was a lot of funny stuff. I mean, as many, restaurant kitchens do, there was some characters. Yeah.
Awesome. And then off to the Barley Mow.
I think that my next job after that was the Barley Mow. So I was in the process at that point of dropping out of university for the second time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I liked going to school and all that, but like sitting there writing essays, it was just very like against my nature. Like I wanted to be like sitting there for that long was very difficult for me. So when I started working in kitchens, I was like, I kind of like this better. I don't know if I felt like that yet at the Barley Mow. Like that was sort of not very like, you know, it was at that point, it was more just a job, but I was like, okay, I'm kind of good at this. And then I kind of wanted to move on. So, you know, I ended up sort of trying to work in better and better kitchens, but the Barley Mow was the first one where I really cooked. You remember the Barley Mow very well, obviously.
Yeah. That was kind
shout out to Majed.
We make fun of that place a lot for good reason, but I always think that was a good spot for both of us at that point because we were just starting to take cooking seriously and thinking about it potentially.
Yeah.
And so we remember we used to have that song like "Doing Things Properly." And
I remember that. Yeah, and then we get in trouble for it. They'd be like, "Hey, yeah, stop doing that."
Yeah, you're so being inefficient.
Too expensive. Do it the cheap way.
And but it was the total lack of adult supervision meant we could like learn how to.
Oh yeah, remember jazz nights when we'd like it was like the CBC jazz show would come on and you like strung up like Christmas lights or something from the basement in the kitchen, turned off all the lights, and the server's like, "We can't see what we're doing, and we're dropping glasses," and you like refuse to turn the lights back on.
Yeah, don't mess with jazz.
Fun times.
So after that great experience, what was the next restaurant?
After that, I think so. At the time, I also had been going to South Korea. I went two summers in a row. So I worked at the Barley Mow. I went to South Korea. I taught English for a summer. I came back. I worked at the Barley Mow. I dropped out of Carleton. and I went back to Korea. And then I went to Vancouver. And when I went to Vancouver, at that point, I was like, okay, I don't think I'm going back to university. So I was still teaching English a little bit. And then I was trying to work in the best restaurant that would let me in the kitchen, basically. I ended up at this place called the Wheezy Bistro, which was like a, you know, sort of high end New Orleans kind of a restaurant, you know, like black and scallops, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
And then I ended up at this place called Star Anise, which was a really weird, like high end restaurant off of Granville. And it was owned by the people, like, remember that show Reboot? YTV was like one of the first CGI kind of shows.
Yeah.
So it was the woman, like this Bulgarian woman, who was the animator for that, and took her reboot money and opened and bought like a high-end place called Star Anise with her partner, who was like a also Bulgarian ballet dancer. And it was just those two and their children and me in this tiny place. And it was like really not busy, and they didn't really know anything about restaurants. And like, it was like, she took down all the art that was there and put up like kind of reboot looking like CGI, like early days, like early 2000s style, like kind of not Photoshop, but like CGI, like images as like the art on the walls. And they listened to the Titanic soundtrack over and over again. It was like, it was kind of a bad scene. And like, they were like, it wasn't busy. They're like, wow, the sea bass is still good. Get the kid to try it. And like, the kid would eat it and get sick. And then, so I didn't stay there that long. I was also supposed to be like the sous chef, and I was all excited about that. But then like, I'd come in to work and like the dishes from the day before would be like in a sink full of tepid water. And like, so the like, first thing I did was like wash like really old dishes from the night before. It was just like, it was kind of a weird place.
You never mentioned this to me before, and I'm starting to realize why.
Yeah. Oh, it was a scene. And then from there, I ended up this place called the Brass Monkey.
Yeah.
In Vancouver, that was on Denman Street. And that was like in like the martini bar kind of period. So everything, like all the drinks were served in like martini glasses. There was blue curacao everywhere, like lychees everywhere, like that kind of, and that sort of Asian fusion, British Columbia kind of thing going on in the kitchen. And there's a bunch of crazy stories from there, but somehow, I don't even know where to begin with all this, but the chef ended up getting beaten up really bad, possibly beaten up by the owner, who had a crush on the manager that this chef was like sleeping with or something. And like, there was this, all this drama, the chef ended up getting beaten up, and stopped working there. And then I was like the chef somehow. Very,
that's
like
probably the best very becoming a chef story I've ever heard.
I don't know if I probably wouldn't have ended up like becoming a chef nearly as quickly if that guy hadn't gotten beaten up. it was weird. It was it was a really fun place to work, but it was like very like a very wild place.
Yeah,
kind of
I remember
late night spot, like like
going to visit you in Bro Shack and like ending up on a beach till the sun came up.
that was like a couple days a week at least. It was a lot of fun. And then from there, while I was working there, my brother unfortunately passed away. And I moved back to Ottawa, and then I was still kind of trying to get working in better and better places. And, I ended up at Domus. Actually, no, sorry. I ended up at the Urban Well first, because my friend Jacob Van Regen was running the kitchen there. Mm-hmm. It was that weird kind of pub in Sandy Hill, like a university kind of bar. So I mean, chicken buffalo chicken wrap and stuff for a few months, and then I ended up at Domus. No, actually, I was working at both for a little bit, and then I ended up at Domus. And so Domus would have been the place that sort of really kind of started to shape me as a chef. You know, the ingredients. It was like the first place that I really saw people that were like proud to be cooks and chefs, mm-hmm. and like really took their work seriously, and like were like, you know, proud of the work they did. So that was like, you know, kind of changed a lot of things for me. Yeah.
And then, so when you left there, I took your place there. That's how I got the job there.
I think Farber took my place, because I remember training Farber, like my last day, which I burnt a whole two sheet pans of smoked trout, sorry John, and also dropped a 8-liter bucket of pickled beets in the walk-in fridge. So my last day was like apologizing for burning fish sorry, like I did my best to get the beet stains off of everything, but like it's probably still kind of red in that walk-in if it exists somewhere.
Oh, that's right. Oh yeah, you told me to go because somebody else had left, so I always accredited you for getting me that job, but some reason I remember that you got it for me, but I think it was just that you knew somebody else was leaving.
Yeah. I'm like, my timeline in that period is a little, you know, it's going back a while now, but, that was a very, like, you know, as you know, a great place to learn.
Yeah. And then where did you go after that?
So that was, I was working there, and then that's around the time my son Declan was born. Mm-hmm. And like, I was like, kind of freaking about that. I was like, I thought diapers were like really expensive, and like, I didn't know anything about like, you know, fatherhood or anything like that. So I was like, I need a job that makes us like, you know, more money. I was like, just freaking out. And I saw this ad in the paper back when, you know, people used to look in the paper for jobs for, this like a head chef position at this place on Elgin called Oz Cafe that I don't think I'd ever heard of before before I saw the ad. So I went there on, I think it was Valentine's Day with my then girlfriend. We just went in to have a drink to like sort of see the place. And then, you know, the server was asking us what we do, and I was like telling her, and she was like, okay. And she went and talked to Oz, and she's like, Oz came over. She's like, so I heard you're a cook. And then we ended up talking, and I ended up like just sort of, you know, going back a day later to meet her and her brother. And we ended up just like hanging out for a few hours, and we just decided to like, okay, well, let's see if you'll be the chef at Oz Cafe. And then I stayed there for 8 years.
Yeah.
Hi, Oz. which was awesome. It was like, you know, super, super fun time of my life.
Yeah. I definitely want to get back after we finish the timeline to the Oz Cafe days, because I think that place played an important part, obviously, in your career, but also just it's kind of central to like the Ottawa cooking scene.
Right.
So we can talk about that after, but I'll put a pin in that. So
sure.
So you're at Oz for 8 years. And while you were there, that's when you won. It was like 2012. You won gold medal plates. Do you want to?
Yes. Well, so at that time, like we were like kind of, you know, there was a weird sort of like the restaurant world was kind of weird in that, like you were either a super fancy place like Domus or Becta, or, you know, like a hotel kind of casino, like a really fine dining place, or you weren't a good restaurant. That was sort of like, like the sort of mind state in the food world, like not just in Ottawa, but that was kind of like, there wasn't a lot of places that like were casual and using good ingredients and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So at the time, like, I don't like, we weren't really considered a very serious restaurant from that like point of view. So when we got invited to do the gold medal place, that was kind of like a big surprise for us, and I think for a lot of people. And I was just like, I was like, oh, we're going to throw a curveball on this thing. So I was like, just sort of try to come up with like, I was like, what can I do that's like no one else is going to do? And that's how we ended up with the Yak, like still, you know, almost a decade later, known as like the Yak guy. Yeah. So we just sort of like, Yacked Attack, yeah. And yeah, we won. So that was a big surprise to us. But again, it was a lot of fun. Oh, and you were there. You were cooking with us that day.
Yeah,
you were doing the tomatillos.
Yeah, I was in charge of the fryer, and I remember.
Oh, yeah.
You were really.
Yeah, I was concerned. I'm still concerned. We were supposed to be able to use the NAC's fryer, and then there was some sort of, I don't know, some little trickery, I think, there. But I'm not accusing anyone of that. But anyways, I remember we also came prepared with a pot or two pots of oil.
Yeah, well, that's
and you were given the task of like, and you had to take an elevator up and down, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to go down.
Great job, thank you so much.
Well, and I remember you said to me that like you got a weird vibe when you asked if anyone was going to use the fryer, and everyone was being like really coy. And so, so I brought a pot and oil to the basement, and sure enough, the deep fryer was like a gong show. Everybody was.
Yeah. I remember we got there, the deep fryer was looking real pristine, and then a little of it after it was looking not so, there was a bunch of stuff. Then I was like,
So a pastry chef let me use a burner over on her side, and I was just deep frying in a pot and watching everybody else fight over the deep fryer full of, I think it was like sesame seeds that Blackie had
dumped
in there. Yeah,
it was like full of allergens.
Yeah, I was very happy to have the pot.
Yeah, that was, thank you for that.
That was fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, you told me that gold medal plates, when you went to the actual, the Canadian Cooking Championship or whatever it's called, you described it as the Hunger Games for chefs. So I'd be interested to hear your stories from that.
Well, they just kind of like put you through the ringer, you know. It's like a 2-day thing, and it's like you get there and they kind of like, you know, they kind of try to get you drunk the first night, basically. And then in the morning you have to go, I can't remember the order of it, but there's like the, you go in the morning, you do this, you have to go shopping and like make this dish to go with the mystery wine. And then the next day you have to go and, they do the black box thing. And then the same day you have to make your dish for like 700 people or something. So it's just like this grind, you know, and they just sort of, you know, they make it think like, it's sort of like, you know, like the cooking show thing where they just mess with the cooks a bit. And I'm just why does this have to be so like difficult? And why is it always cooks? Like there's no show about like where they like make accountants like do math while they like flick the lights on and off and light their shoelaces on fire. It's like let the guy cook. Jeez. So but yeah, like the Hunger Games, yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it's also, you know, it's a double entendre, right?
So after you left Oz Cafe, did you go straight to Dish, or is there something I'm forgetting?
I floated around a bunch. So I went to, I worked sort of like in a bunch of different kitchens around the city, like just sort of helping out like for a summer. So like I spent time in the kitchen at Murray Street and Allium and Absinthe and Wellington Gastropub and a few other places, and just sort of floated around as like a, you know, a set of hands. And then I also went and spent, 2 months in, at Fogo Island Inn, in Newfoundland, mm-hmm. Which was a really cool experience. From the most amazing, like the island, it's just unreal. And a lot of cool stuff to work with, like, you know, like wild moose and caribou and really cool seafood and all like the wild berries and, mushrooms and stuff for the island. So that was a really cool experience. And then when I got back, I, went to Swaff.
Oh, I had those switched in my head. I thought you were at Swaff after Dish.
No, I was. It was Swaff for I think almost 3 years, mm-hmm. which again was a really great experience.
Yeah,
working with Veronique and with Roxanne and Chris and everybody else. I still love Swaff. Still go all the time. Still get to go to the staff parties. I love Swaff.
That's kind of where like. It's funny because the food that you were making at Oz Cafe, the longer you were cooking there, the more like it became sort of like Jamie's style of food, which is like more ingredient driven and simple, but like really tasty. And there's always some sort of little twist, but it's always like very, very simple. And then I found that at Swaff, it's sort of, you really like zoomed in on that. And was that you responding to having like, it's such a wine driven restaurant. So that having to make like simple,
yeah,
clear flavors.
Mean, the sort of, like the idea at Swaff was for the, you know, the food to kind of go with the wine, not to be like, it wasn't like they didn't want like a chefy, mm-hmm. chefy chef, which is fine. Cause like the longer I do this, the less I am interested in doing that. So like, it was just like, don't do anything stupid basically. So I still try to do that when I cook, like, don't, you know, put a bunch of things on a plate that don't need to be there. So yeah, like simple, straightforward ingredient food is kind of, that's what I like. That's what I like to cook.
Obviously you're moving on now to open a new spot, Arlo.
Yes.
That must be like, it's a bizarre situation, obviously with the pandemic, everything got put on hold and stuff, but.
Yes, it is.
And that food is obviously going to be designed to go with the wine since it's a natural wine restaurant. Are you going to try to keep going in the same vein as you were at Swaff, or is there some new things that you're going to try out? Or
I would say I'm still myself. So I still have, like, you know, a lot of the same sensibilities and, you know, going to use a lot of the same farmers. I think, like, you know, definitely going to try to sort of not just replicate, you know, the stuff I made there. Although some of the stuff I think things I like to cook, I'm going to keep mm-hmm. cooking them. That's a tough one, how to like separate what's the difference between the two approaches.
Well, I guess it'll probably just sort of flesh out as you do it, especially since now you're just doing it on a barbecue.
Well, I mean, yeah, so I would say for the moment at Arlo, the menu is very much based around what we're working with, which is just a barbecue and a cutting board, really. Mm-hmm. But I actually really kind of I'm really enjoying this. Like, it's like, it makes it like really easy for me to like make decisions and to like, you know, make food that doesn't have like unnecessary, you know, components or elements to it. Mm-hmm. I think like, you know, for me, just like, you know, that's, we're like a natural wine focused place. So you kind of like, it's like thinking like natural food, you know, like kind of less intervention, kind of as the same approach to food as the, you know, the winemakers have toward the wine. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds great. I think Arlo has all the ingredients to be the center town industry spot that that Oz Cafe had. And I feel like the Ottawa food scene has evolved a lot since Oz Cafe. And I feel like your food will sort of be like a touch point, like as it gets better and everyone gets more like wise to what's good. It'll sort of like be the spot.
That's the hope. Yeah.
You guys just got a really good review in the Citizen.
We did, which is nuts. Cause we like, you know, it was like our fifth service, outside on a barbecue. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, and I recognized Peter. So I was like, okay, here we go. he was very, very kind with us. So that was great.
Do you feel
simple and stellar food? Yeah. That's what we make. Simple and stellar.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter.
Do you feel like the pressure's off a little bit? Like you were saying earlier, this is sort of something I've been feeling too, is like, because
like with the pandemic stuff.
Yeah. Like it's
I do feel a bit like that. Like I feel like people are kind of like, very just happy to be out. And if you kind of give them something like that's simple and like made with love and sort of presented them kindly and you're sort of, you know, very hospitable with people, like they're people are really easy to make happy right now. Mm-hmm. Which is great. Like everyone's been so friendly and so kind. And, I've really been enjoying being back at work, and I like being like, you know, I'm outside on the patio with them, it's just like kind of a dream. Although it has been stinking hot this summer. Like, it's like either rains, in which case like, okay, I don't work today. or it's been like 35 degrees. Shout out to Mitch for standing over that grill.
I've been finding like it's like crazy. Cause this is the first time I've ever had a restaurant with a patio. So it's such like a weird thing where you're just totally dependent on the weather and everyone's checking the weather 100 times all during the day. And,
I keep checking the weather for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be checking it on Monday and I'll look at the weather for the weekend, which is never actually the weather for the weekend. And then I won't look at the weather for the day and I'll get caught on my bike in a rainstorm. I'll be like, oh yeah, I gotta worry about today's weather as well. Cause I usually bike to work. So,
were you into natural wines before meeting Alex, or is this something like, are you learning a lot about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think for me, like, and this is sort of goes back to like my trajectory there. I went to Europe for the first time the year after I was at Oz. During that time, I also went to Europe for 2 months, and I spent about a month in or 3 weeks or something like that in Paris. Mm-hmm. And the places I went to, like that was sort of like when this was, I think in 2013. And that was sort of when, they kind of like natural wine was really starting to take off in France. I was probably a thing before that, but I think it's when it really started to, you know, that year and the year, a couple years prior was when it really started to become like a big thing. So just everywhere I went, all the kind of the wine bars and restaurants that I was going to in Paris were only serving that. And I was like, oh my God, like what the hell is this? It's delicious. Like I was a real like anti-wine person for a long time. I was like, I only drink beer. Wine is stupid. It's too expensive. People are just making shit up when they talk about it. I was like, ah, yeah, wine. And then I went to France. I was like, oh wait, my bad. So when I came back to Canada, I was like, oh, I want to drink more of that kind of wine, but it didn't exist. Like there was nowhere to buy it or drink it in Canada as far as I could find.
Yeah.
So when Soif opened, that was the first place like in the region, I think that was buying that stuff and selling it. So I was like, I want to work there. Then my friend Chloe Berlanga was sort of, filling in as a chef there, I think, sort of thing at the time. And, she was, she was about to have her son Lou, so she wasn't interested in the job, and she called me, and I met Vero, and I was like, "You got the good wine?" She's like, "Yeah." I was like, you got the food?" I was like, "Yeah." And then I ended up working there. It's good.
That's awesome. So yeah, because I think that's one of the first places I had natural wine in Ottawa, and not only did they have like a pretty extensive selection, or they still do, but it seemed to be that's what the people who worked there were like passionate about. It's like, that's what they're excited.
That's what drew a lot of people. Well, I mean, also like, you know, Veronique in the wine world is a huge, huge figure. So like, you know, we had people, a lot of people come like move to Gatineau and Hull from Quebec City and Montreal and other places because they wanted to work with Vero to learn from her.
That's crazy.
Sommelier, the tasting and the all that stuff, which I'm pretty bad at. Like I'm like this is delicious, but like I can't remember any of the names. Like it's so much. Like when I started there, I was like taking notes. I was like, okay, which one's the grape? Which one's the the guy? And which one's the region? And like which one's the like? I just like couldn't keep it straight. It was too much. It was kind of like going to like algebra class when I had like flunked out of like, you know, normal math. I was like, okay. And after a while I was like, you know what? I don't really care. Like, I just like, is it good? I have a decent palate, but I had like my memory for the details of it. I just like, after a while I was like, you know, I don't have space in my head for this. I'm bad at remembering this. I just like, I'll just aim to go drink wine where I know it's going to be good and just be happy with that.
Well, I find like when you're trying to pair food with wine, you're actually better off not overthinking the wine. Like if you taste it, you just want to pair the food with like the first, you know, if it's like ripe cherry or something, the first most obvious flavor. If you're trying to pair it with some tertiary, like sixth flavor in, like no one's going to get that. And it's actually not going to be a good pairing anyways.
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of two approaches to it. Like you can sort of try to pinpoint, you know, a major characteristic in the wine and sort of either sort of put something that goes really well with it or something that kind of really contrasts with it and try to sort of set off fireworks like that. That's sort of one approach, which can be fun if you're doing like a tasting menu with the winemaker and you're really like kind of going for that whole thing. Or the other thing is like, you just make food that tastes good and you know, everybody, if like, you know, you just sort of make food that tastes good, that isn't super, you know, weird. And then you drink, if you like your food and you like your wine, you're going to be happy basically.
Yeah.
So like, to not get too hung up on it. And that's sort of mainly my approach right now. Cause we're not doing pairings or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So just like, you know, good food, good wine, everyone's going to be happy.
Yeah. But especially if you think about the places in the world that are known for having like good food and wine, like parts of Italy and France and stuff, I don't think like the dishes evolved. Like they weren't like, oh, this is going to go well with the right.
Well, I mean, they just like, you know, you'd go to like Spain, Italy, they've just been eating and drinking so well for so long that it's like, they're like, why are you even talking about this? You know, it's just it's lunch. That's just your lunch. which is a beautiful thing. So we kind of want to have a bit of that casual, attitude towards this and not get too hung up on things and not be too dogmatic about things. Just sort of like, you know, be like, okay, the wine's good, the food's good, everyone's gonna be
check.
The music's good, the server is kind. That's it.
Yeah. When I talked to Alex, he mentioned that he felt like natural wine was actually a good way to get people into wine in general. That sometimes some wines could feel a little stuffy and it might be intimidating, but he felt it was sort of like he likened it to the punk rock.
Yeah, I agree with him there. Like I remember like when I was in France, I was in this wine bar and like I was like looking at the labels of the wine. I was like, man, these guys are crazy. You know, like there was like, you know, like there was like somebody had like sort of cribbed the Sex Pistols album cover as like a wine label. And I was like, you could do that? Like I was like, that was so foreign from like my understanding of what the wine world was. So I think there was a kind of like a big kind of renaissance and a big injection of like youthful energy into the wine world at that time, which I think for a long time had been kind of like very, you know, there was an old guard that you just couldn't kind of get past.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, you got younger people like to just sort of take risks and get really into it and take things in a really different direction, which I think has been, you know, in my opinion, has been great for wine.
Yeah, it's
but I'm the cook, so you know, don't know what to listen to.
So I promised I would circle back to Oz Cafe because I think that was, well, you spent 8 years there, so that's obviously an important part of your career.
Yes.
But I also feel like it's an important part of the Ottawa restaurant scene because that was the first, like, that I know of, that was the first industry spot in the sense that that was the first time in Ottawa there was, like, a critical mass of, like, good restaurants big enough to support an industry restaurant. Before that, there would have been, like, three spots. So that place evolved as part of, like, the Ottawa restaurant scene evolved.
Yeah. And that was intentional, like, on my part, because I think I'd gone to, like, New York or Toronto or maybe both, and had gone to some, like, kind of fun casual places that were open late that, like, were full of people getting off work, and I was like, this is, like, what, something that Ottawa could really use. So we kind of really went of our way to, like, promote that. And when people came in from other restaurants, like, Oz was always super, super generous with them. And we would kind of go out for dinner, her and I, and, like, just sort of meet people at other restaurants and be like, yeah, you got to come in. Or, like, so it was just we really sort of made a concerted effort to, like, build that as, like, a part of our, the culture and the business of the place. Yeah.
But that place, you also, it's kind
and
of
the chef night as well.
Yeah, the chef night was, like, a huge part of the Ottawa restaurant scene. I remember like every time a new one was coming up, like, getting excited to, I made it to almost, like, many of them. But yeah, it was always, like, really exciting and like an interesting part of the dining landscape. But the part I think about with that is, cause it's something that you kind of do a lot, is, you ended up in, like, the craziest little kitchen. Like, you got to describe right now what the Oz Cafe kitchen looked like when you first walked into it. Cause I think I came the second time you went in.
Right. When I first started, there was no hood vent, which meant no gas, which meant an electric stove. So I think when I started there was a panini press and electric stove, and I don't think there was anything else. So that was, you know, that was interesting. Like, you know, we had a grill pan on one thing that was just sort of always on. It was just extra, like, ridiculous. Like, I was coming from Domus, where, you know, they were cooking, like, cast iron was such a big thing there, like, cooking, like, we would cook steaks and cast iron, like, you know, like, smoky that gets.
Yeah.
So, like, you're not allowed to have a gas oven, but I was like, well, I'm allowed to use my cast iron pan and baste things with butter. And, like, the whole restaurant's just, like, people are coughing and, like, they're throwing open the windows and, like, people's eyes are stinging. So, eventually we did get some gas in there, but, like, it was like a good while. I want to say, like, maybe almost a year before we got gas, and, like, we burned through, like, four or five electric stoves. Jeez. And they all had, like, their own idiosyncrasies. Like, one, when you turned one burner on, like, the other one would just go down. So you can, like, there was a finite amount of energy that could be put into anything. If you're, like, trying to saute something, one thing, and, like, you know, you kind of had to, like, move the, like, dance the pans back and forth over the stove to kind of, like, get as much heat, like, one shot a lightning bolt across the kitchen. Sorry, Simon Bell. And, like, after that, we're like, okay, we got to change this. This is not good. So yeah, we eventually got gas, but yeah, no, it's a very, very small space. Kind of small, but also awkwardly shaped. And, like, it's also kind of like the thoroughfare for, the servers to the bar and the pickup. So yeah, it was a challenging space to work in, but I kind of, like, sometimes I miss it. Cause, like, I remember, like, going to work, when I started at Swath, I was like, man, it's like 10 steps to the walk-in. This is exhausting. like I could do like a service at Oz with just pivoting. Like, I could just sort of pivot off my one foot. Yeah. And, like, you know, the sink to wash my hands was, like, less than one step away. Like, everything was just, like, within arm's reach.
I kind of
miss that sometimes. Like, the, like, you know, you can make a small awkward space work if you, once you get used to it.
When I did my Oz night there, I remember, my friend Oliver and I noticing that it was actually, like, the perfect use of the small space. And it was actually quite easy to work in there because it had evolved. Like, you and, like, Simon had, like, very carefully placed everything. So everything was
But it was also like when we'd had the guest chefs in for chef night, like they'd come in, they'd look at the space and they would like move something. I was like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. I can't believe that. Like I never thought of that. So like the chef night on top of it being like a really fun thing was actually a great learning experience for me as well, because you know, I would greet the chefs when they come in. I just sort of saw like, you know, how they had prepped their food. They'd tell me how they made it. There would often be leftovers that I could, you know, taste and kind of like, so, and the way they operated within the space, like all these things kind of informed, you know, informed the way I end up kind of using the space. And I also just learned a ton from all those chefs from, seeing how they did things.
Yeah. And you guys have started already with, at Arlo, I noticed you guys are doing like takeovers with, is the girls from Corner Peach are doing like a backyard
barbecue? Yeah, they're in today actually. Mm-hmm. And last week we had Elma and Tinkset, like a Catalan. They have two restaurants in Montreal, and they came in. Juan and Carlos and Lindsay came in last week, and they were awesome. And then actually, the first thing they did when they came in is rearranged the kitchen at Arlo, and now it's the same way they did it. So I'm still up to my old tricks of having other people figure things out for me.
I also remember you saying that like chefs would always forget like sweet containers and hotel pans, and that's how you guys built it.
Oh man, we had a pretty good like. Oh, but things also went missing though, so it was a bit of a give and take.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you know, and actually, like Elma left these cool little the delis, like the delis that all the cooks use.
Yeah.
They have the square ones.
Oh yeah.
Have you tried those?
Yeah, they're amazing.
You don't waste any space.
You can get them.
I don't know why they're not all square.
There's a supply company in Montreal that sells them. I got them for a bit. They're pretty expensive, but yeah, they are.
Very worth it.
Aesthetically pleasing. Cause yeah, it's like,
oh, and then just like, and no wasted space. Like all the like, circles don't fill a space well. Squares, no. Much more efficient.
Yeah. I'd love to know how like delis became, like every kitchen I've ever worked in, just deli tubs for everything. And
yeah,
it seems, I guess probably cause they're cheap, but it seems funny that that's like,
yeah,
delis and painter's tape are like the,
yeah, the, it's like, they've just been co-opted by the, by the chefs.
Yeah. There was one other thing I wanted to talk about, which is kind of off topic, but, so you and I, we became friends, well, we became roommates, but we knew each other before that through skateboarding. And I've noticed like a trend where like, a lot of people who skateboard end up being chefs. And I wonder if you have like Mark from town, you know,
yeah.
Yannick, it was a, like an incredible skater, back
Yannick then. LaSalle from Fougere.
Yeah. So do you have any theories about what happens there?
I got a few. I think, you know, both kind of have, like a creative approach to the world, like just of seeing things. Like, I think, you know, if you skateboarders, they walk down the street and like, they see like a, you know, a broken signpost, they're like, oh, I'm going to grind up that thing. You know what I mean? Like you kind of, the way your way of looking at the world is like, different than most people's, I think. So I think that, you know, there's a creativity part. I mean, there's also like the kind of delinquency part, where, you know, skateboarders and, chefs, it's a bit of like, you know, there's like that sort of image or lifestyle, all that kind of, you know, kind of goes along with it, I guess, that, mm-hmm. There's some overlap there as well for better or for worse.
Yeah. I think they both share, skateboarding and being a chef, share in common that it's extremely difficult and not a lot of people like fully respect it. Like when you tell people you're going to be a chef,
there's that. And I think they both have, like, there's a lot of joie de vivre in both things. Like a lot of like, you know, highs and lows,
mm-hmm.
You know, the excitement of landing that trick, the defeat of like, you know, getting a shinner, you know, it's the kind of like a little bit like, oh, that was a great service, or, oh man, we got our asses kicked. So I think there's that as well. Yeah. I think that it doesn't surprise me that there's a lot of people, that have that overlap in their lives.
So, you were just talking about sort of like the skater approach to life and the chef approach. So that was another thing I wanted to talk about, 'cause I know you personally, so I know you're not like the type to be a chef nerd on Instagram. I'm sure most of the people you follow on Instagram are actually skaters. And
there's a lot of skateboarders, skateboarders and memes are like kind of what I really am focused on. I like the memes.
Yeah. You're just not the type to like creep menus online and try to keep up with every other celebrity chef. So what drives you to create new dishes, and where do you get your inspiration from?
I mean, right now it's like, I just call the farmer. Like I think the vegetables are kind of my biggest inspiration right now. And like, it's my favorite time of year to be a cook because it's so easy. You know what I mean? Like the cucumbers doing all the heavy lifting. You just got to kind of a little salt, a little acid, some herbs, ding, ding, hey, order up, you know? So really like it for me right now, it's just about what we can kind of get our hands on. And because there's so little we can do to the food right now at Arlo with just a grill and a cutting board. Like, I can't braise anything. I can't, pan sear anything. I can't, there's a lot, like there's very sort of few moves that we have. So it's like, just get the really nice stuff in and make it like super fresh and alive, and people seem to be happy with that, and I'm happy making it. So yeah,
that's, I feel like the longer I do this, the more I gravitate towards that, is like, you know, just get the ingredients in first, whatever looks the most delicious, that's what I'm going to make.
It makes it really easy to do it well, you know?
Yeah. It's not as much thinking, and it actually works out better more or less every time.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that more or less wraps up everything I wanted to talk to you about. But if you have,
I thought we were going to spend most of this time talking about like Gamora.
Yes. If anybody is listening to this, the best thing on Netflix is the Italian gangster show Gamora. And if you're not watching it, treat yourself.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought we were going to talk about eels and the.
Oh yeah. I want to talk about like fun stuff, but no, that was great. we can do another episode. We talk like nothing about food or Jamie Stunt. And I think I'd have more fun with that, but that's for another time. Maybe.
Yeah. The second season of the podcast will just be like, just really nerding out on eels.
Shout out to eels. They're amazing, mysterious, beautiful, and disgusting.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to seeing you at Arlo, hopefully eating off that barbecue.
Thank you so much, Adam. It was fun.
Ciao. Thank you for listening to At The Pass. Don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a nice review. And feel free to get in touch. My email is adam@northandnavy.com.